2. Cassie's hand stuck in the air, her questions spilling from her lips before I'd indicated she could ask it.
Professor Walker, are you suggesting a higher power called on them?
I shook my head. That's not what I said. I was only reminding you that each of the civilizations we're studying this semester showed proof of worshipping deities, many relating to the skies and beyond.
Like heaven?
Luca asked. I saw a twinkle in his eyes. He loved to stir up debates in class and tended to time the comments with the last 5 minutes remaining in the lecture. I appreciated his spirit. Sure, kind of like heaven. As a people, no matter where we originated from, we always look to the stars for unanswered questions. All around the world, we have sun gods, or gods who ride dragons to earth, visitors from afar. We have dozens of races paying homage to entities from space, or the heavens, if you will, Luca. We still do it to this day, I told them, crossing my arms as I leaned against my desk at the front of the classroom. The seats were mostly full, which was a good sign. Many of the college classrooms would be missing 40% of their students before Thanksgiving weekend, so I took pride that mine stayed engaged in my lessons. Cassie's arm flew up again, and I smiled at her. She wore a sweatshirt, the college's acronym printed across the chest. Had I looked that young when I'd started post-secondary? It wasn't that long ago, only 20 years, but standing there watching my students, it felt like a lifetime had passed. I nodded at her. Yes, Cassie.
Do you believe in heaven?
She asked, and everyone regarded me with interest. I didn't know how to answer them. But the bell rang, the clock striking 3, and I shrugged as they started to rise. I guess you'll have to wait until after the holidays to find out. Everyone stay safe and enjoy your time with your families. Don't forget that your paper is due when class resumes. So make sure you take a break from football and eating pie to comb through the assignment. A few of them groaned at the news as they flipped laptops closed and slung packs over their shoulders. The rush to escape was on, and it only took a minute before I was alone in my classroom again. The silence was welcome. My phone buzzed in my pocket, and I tugged it free, checking to see who it was. My sister was asking what time I'd be arriving. I sighed, sitting in my leather chair, and I spun around, stopping to gawk out the window. Most of the oak trees in the courtyard were bare-branched. A few desperate auburn leaves clung with hope. I found myself regretting my decision to leave town for the holidays. It had been a year since Mom had passed away, and the wound was fresh in my mind. Seeing Beverly and the kids would only remind me of what I was missing. The phone was heavy in my hand as I replied, "I'll be there by 6. I hit send and slipped it into the breast pocket of my tweed blazer. I'd accepted the role of classic professor with open arms, the loafers, elbow patches, complete with beige pants. I stifled a laugh, wondering what my dad would have thought of all this. From the pictures I'd seen of him at his college, he'd have told me to change into jeans and a t-shirt. Thinking of him made me check his old watch. The leather straps were cracked and had been repaired on numerous occasions, but the watch still ticked. I spun the mechanism around a dozen times, winding it, and slid my sleeve into place. I flipped my laptop open, checking emails, and saw an incoming call from my old professor. With a smile, I accepted, tilting the screen until I was in the center of the video chat window. "Dr. Klein, to what do I owe the pleasure?"
"Are we using titles now, Dr. Walker?"
the man asked. He was nearing 60, but to me he still seemed like the 40-year-old man that had mentored me from a young age. His hair had more gray in it, and his neatly trimmed beard was whiter than ever, but he'd always taken exceptional care of himself. I've never cared to be called a doctor. I'm proud of my achievements, but at the end of the day, I study old relics and teach anthropology classes. Let's skip the formalities, Richard.
Good. I heard you were in Mexico.
Richard leaned away, picking up a cup with Harvard written on it. I lifted an eyebrow. I hadn't told anyone where my true destination had been, instead opting to pretend I'd left for some rest and relaxation. A few months ago. I can't believe we haven't spoken since then.
That's how life gets. I've been busy, and you with a new job.
So that was what this was really about. Richard, the job is going well. I think I'm getting through to these students. The older man sipped his drink and set the cup down, stapling his fingers.
You were my best student. Your father would want you here, teaching in my department at Harvard, not for some two-bit college.
I cleared my throat, speaking low. I know what I'm doing. I get that you're trying to protect me and my career, but I won't work there. I've told you 100 times.
I understand, but please consider it, at least. I've had some issues with the new method and theory, Professor, and have already suggested the perfect replacement.
Dr. Richard Klein knew how to push the right buttons. I tapped my desk, seeing someone approach my office door. She looked through the glass, and I lifted a finger. Richard, I have to go. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. Say hi to Janelle and the kids for me. My mentor rubbed his chin and nodded.
You heading home?
I am.
Tell me you'll contemplate taking the position.
I sighed and smiled at him, not wanting to argue. I'd only make myself late for dinner. I'll call you soon.
Splendid. Take care of yourself, Rex.
The call ended, and I shut the laptop, waving Jessica inside.
Do you mind if we speak for a moment?
The president of the college asked. She looked as professional as ever, her curly black hair dropping to her shoulders, barely skimming her jacket. She was part of the reason for my wardrobe change since I'd started here. A strict dress code was mandatory for the professors at this college, and I was happy to oblige.
Sure, Jessica. Come in.
I stood, coming to sit on the desk, and she took the first row seat Luca had occupied.
Rex, I know this wasn't your first choice of schools,
she began. I love this job. I couldn't help but cut her off, and I zipped it, sealing my lips. I wondered if she'd overheard any of my conversation with Richard.
Regardless, with your father's tenure at Harvard and your subsequent graduation there, I assume you had your sights set on teaching in his footsteps. I just wanted to say how delighted we are with your performance so far, and that we're thrilled to see you thriving in our administration.
Jessica smiled, and I returned it. I'm glad to hear that. I know what you said makes sense, but I'm ready to carve my own path. Hopefully that involves teaching here for as long as you'll have me, I assured her. She got to her feet, reaching her hand out. We shook, and her grip lingered a few seconds longer than I expected.
Are you doing anything for the holidays?
She asked. Leaving town to visit my sister and her husband, I told her, and she nodded. How about you? You and Mr. Hansen doing anything special? Jessica cleared her throat.
There is no Mr. Hansen.
She walked to the doorway and turned before exiting.
See you in a few days, Rex.
What was that? I snapped out of it. If I was going to make it to my hometown by 6, I'd have to put a move on. An hour later, I was driving west in my 5-year-old SUV, the heated seat on low as the temperature had dropped substantially. Growing up in the bedroom community north of Springfield had been boring as a kid, but once I was out of Boston's traffic, I appreciated the open air and the quiet roads. It was still busier than normal, even though it was midweek. The holidays always created a mad rush to and from the big cities, but it didn't seem as bad today as previous years. My music was interrupted as someone called me. I glanced at the screen, seeing Marcus's name, so I tapped the phone button on my steering wheel. Marcus, what's up?
You have to be kidding me.
Didn't you see my text? He demanded, his voice high-pitched. It tended to do that when he was excited. No, I'm driving to my sister's. What did it say? I asked.
Turn on the radio,
he said. I went to do so, but he was on the Bluetooth.
I'll have to hang up first.
Fine, call me back.
This could be it, he said ominously.
Could be what? I questioned out loud as I scanned through the radio stations. I used my satellite radio to pick up what I thought to be the most reputable news feed and waited for an advertisement to stop.
Welcome back to Across This Great Nation with Bill McCreary. Today, we're with astronomist Dr. Lisa Bronte. Lisa, what can you tell us about the anomaly discovered last night?
My interest was piqued, and I shifted in my seat, waiting for her reply.
Well, Bill, we don't know much. The image only shows a small dark object against Pluto, so this will be speculation and conjecture, but there is a chance it's not just a hunk of asteroid from the Kuiper Belt.
What makes you say that, Dr. Bronte? Bill asked.
This is early days, but it doesn't appear to be moving.
Which means?
If it broke free from something, it would have a trajectory. You need reverse thrust to completely stop out there.
What are you saying, Doctor? That this is a vessel from outer space? Bill asked, and I cracked a smile.
Doubtful, but we'll be keeping a close eye on it, Lisa told him.
They went on to discuss what it most likely was, and that ranged from a distortion of gas to a large meteoroid. I turned it off and returned Marcus's call.
You can't be serious, I said as soon as he answered.
I thought you were looking for proof, he asked.
Proof? That's not what this is about, I told him.
Then why are you searching for these strange artifacts from your dad's book?
You want evidence of visitors from another world, don't you? He asked.
I stared forward, staying within my lane as I cruised down the highway. I saw the signs for my hometown and the familiar local shops billboards along the ditches, advertising a couple of businesses I used to frequent as a kid. Marcus, I told you I'm done with all of that. My days of dragging you into underground chambers are over. I cringed as I recalled the man killed in the cavern's collapse. I still didn't know who'd been chasing after us.
But what if there's more?
He asked, and I could picture his face, sullen and withdrawn, as it always had been when he'd first been a student of mine. I knew he'd come from a tough background and had been looking for a real future when we'd met.
There is, but I can't spend my life in pursuit of the invisible. It's time to let this rest.
My tone had a sense of finality to it that Marcus seemed to pick up on.
Okay. I'll keep an eye on this anyway, just in case, he said.
Fine. You do that. What are you up to for the holidays? I asked him, and the pause explained the upcoming answer.
Catching up with some friends. Enjoy your sister's house. Say hi for me,
Marcus told me. I'll get you a piece of pie. I'll be home Sunday. Want to stop by for dinner? I asked him.
Sure. I'll bring the beer. Talk soon, he said, ending the call.
Everything tended to feel smaller when I returned home, and this experience was no different. Except that for the first time, my mom wasn't here. The welcome sign was convivial, stark white with our town's name painted in red. I drove through Main Street, slowing as I did so, and pulled over, deciding I shouldn't arrive empty-handed. The little market my sister and I used to frequent as kids with our mother was gone, replaced with a gym.
Rex? Rex Walker?
Someone asked from the sidewalk. Cool air rolled through my half-cracked open window, and I squinted toward the friendly-voiced man. I climbed out of the SUV, tilting my head, trying to recall his name.
It's me, Turner Denworth,
he said, grinning ear to ear. His teeth were straight and too white, his hair perfectly styled, and he wore an oversized trench and an obviously expensive suit.
Of course, Turner,
I shook his hand, squeezing tighter than I had intended.
What brings you to town?
He asked. Completely random, nothing to do with the fact that it's Thanksgiving and my sister lives here, I told him with a smile.
Always were a sarcastic one, weren't you?
How is Beverly? He asked.
I thought you'd know everything about your community.
I'd seen his re-election posters plastered on the billboards as I'd driven into town. He ignored my jab.
Do you mind asking if I can count on her for her vote?
No problem, Turner. It was good catching up, I lied.
I'd never liked the guy.
Not since he dumped my sister for some cheerleader in Springfield 20-something years ago. I thought he was smarmy then, and he hadn't changed a bit.
Oh, I'm sorry about your mother. Must be difficult coming home, he said before getting into his BMW.
He backed out, leaving without a wave. I watched him go, wondering if it was a mistake to visit here. I could be at my townhouse in Boston, listening to Bach and stoking my fireplace over a glass of red wine. Instead, I was looking for a grocery store in a town I barely recognized. 5 minutes later, I pulled into a giant chain store a few blocks away, one where you could buy a tent, shoes, and lettuce all in one transaction. I'd always hated this kind of place. I tried to picture my dad shopping somewhere like this, but couldn't imagine it. I kept my head down, careful not to run into any more familiar faces, and I managed to escape with a bottle of wine, a fresh baked loaf, and coloring books for the kids. Were they too old for that? I hoped not. Beverly's house was a place I'd never forget, since it was our childhood home, willed to her by Mom. I had no animosity about the inheritance, but I couldn't believe she'd actually chosen to uproot her family and move into it. The sun had set by the time I approached her place, and I paused at the two-way stop signs, contemplating turning around. Instead, I flipped the blinker on and went right, driving the last few blocks faster than I should have, so I didn't change my mind. The streetlights were the old kind, with outdated low-pressure sodium lamps casting an orange glow across the tar-patched street. Massive trees overhung the road, blocking out the night sky, and I parked in front of the house instead of using the driveway. I watched through the living room window, seeing Beverly and Fred inside, bustling around the dining room table. The kids sat on the couch, the lights of the TV flickering over their blank stares. With a deep breath, I lifted my paper bag and small suitcase and strode up the cobblestone sidewalk centering the yard. I remembered Dad putting those in himself. I'd been too young to help much, but I'd stayed with him the entire weekend while he labored, sweating in the summer sun. His best friend Clay had come for the second day. Uncle Clay. I hadn't thought about him in years.
"You going to come in or admire the pavement for a few more minutes?" Beverly asked from the front door.
A golden retriever ran through her legs, barking once before circling me. I petted Roger while he sniffed the grocery bag. "Hey, sis, good to see you." The kids hardly looked up as I set my bags on the old hardwood floors, but Fred entered, wiping his hands on a stained apron before shaking my hand. "Something smells wonderful," I told them, and Beverly's eyes lit up at the compliment.
"I didn't think you'd make it," she said softly, hugging me. "Come on, kids, say hello to your Uncle Rex."
Carson was five, and he sauntered toward me, eyeing me suspiciously. I hadn't visited since the funeral, and I didn't blame them for being cautious. I was practically a stranger. "Hey, fella, I brought coloring books."
"Thank you,"
Edith said, coming in for a hesitant embrace. I patted her back and handed her the goods. She was seven and was a spitting image of Beverly at that age. The two ran off, returning to the couch, discarding the books on the coffee table. Beverly shrugged and motioned for me to follow her inside.
"I made up Carson's room for you."
My old room. This was too strange. The house didn't feel the same, yet nothing had changed but the people inside it. The walls were still a tired beige, the cabinets sturdy but worn.
"I know what you're thinking. We're going to do some work on it, but..."
"It's too soon," I said, and she nodded.
"You always could read my mind. How have you been?"
she asked.
"Didn't you take a trip this summer?"
"I did." Fred opened the oven, and I spied a ham inside.
"Where did you go? A relaxing tropical vacation?"
I glanced at Beverly, and her face grew long.
"Don't tell me you're still doing that."
"Doing what?"
Fred asked, setting the roasting pan on two cork boards.
"Jeez, Rex! You want to end up like Dad did? What the hell are you doing?"
Beverly asked, her teeth clenched together. I hadn't seen her this angry since we were kids.
"Okay, what's going on?"
Fred asked, stepping between us.
"He thinks he can track down Dad. Stupid me actually believed he'd grow out of it. You're dreaming, Rex. He's gone, and there's no bringing him home."
Beverly's shoulders stooped. "I'm not trying to bring anyone back from the dead. I just want to know what he was after. Why would he abandon his family? We were kids." I said it too loudly and leaned against the sink cabinet. "Look at us, 2 minutes together and we're already fighting. Maybe this was a mistake." Fred frowned.
"Nonsense, your family. And there's no shame in wanting answers."
"Great, take his side," Beverly said.
"Side?
He's a grown man, an archaeologist by trade.
One needs an inquisitive mind to do something like that. I don't blame you one bit for being curious about your father. Did you tell him about the box we found?
Fred asked. My skin flushed as he spoke. Box?
I should have told you to forget about that, Fred. Now he's going to obsess over it until he leaves.
I barely heard Beverly's words. Where is it? I asked.
Can we discuss this later? Dinner is ready.
I glanced at my sister, seeing the girl I used to spend so much time with as a kid. She was still in there somewhere, buried behind 20 years of life, 2 childbirths, and a job she hated. I let it go. She was right. Whatever box of Dad's stuff they'd uncovered wasn't as important as me visiting with my family. I walked over to her, pulling her into a real hug, one without pretension or obligation. I held Beverly, her arms wrapping tightly around me, and we laughed at the same time. I kissed the top of her head and let go. I love you, Bev.
You know I'm only mad because I love you, too,
she admitted. I pulled the wine from the brown bag. It was the best I could scrounge up at the chain store, and Fred passed me a bottle opener. Soon we were all sitting around the table, the food plated, the wine poured, our hands washed. Beverly had some casual, easy listening playing, and it reminded me of our mother. She'd always played music while we ate, something she'd done since I could remember.
How's a new job? Fred asked.
Pretty great. The students are receptive. It's nice teaching somewhere and being taken seriously. I have a few bright minds that have some potential, and that makes it worth the effort, I told them. How about you? Fred took this one, since he wasn't mid-bite, and he told me about his landscaping company. He'd expanded the previous summer in Springfield, but since they'd relocated here, he commuted 2 days a week, alternating from his home office in the basement. The food was delicious, far better than whatever I would have scavenged, and even the cheap wine went down nicely with their company. The kids asked to be excused, and Fred took a phone call, leaving Beverly and me alone in the kitchen, cleaning up. There was something on her mind, and I wanted to know what it was. Everything okay? She paused, holding a plate of scraps above an organic bin.
It's tough living here. There are so many memories.
Then sell it and go somewhere else, I told her. She seemed shocked.
Mom wanted me to move in, to stay here with the kids.
Bev, she wanted you to be happy. Plus, she's not around anymore. No one's going to be upset if you sell. Selfishly, I didn't want to have to return again if I could help it.
Are you sure? Fred was saying the same thing. He puts on a supportive face, but I can tell he never wanted to leave Springfield.
Bev continued cleaning up, and I washed the table.
I'm going there tomorrow, if you want to join me.
Where?
The cemetery,
she replied. The last thing I wanted to do was visit a gravestone for my father and mother, but it might be good to put some closure on this chapter of my life. I was done searching for a ghost. He was gone, and I wasn't going to find him. I needed to accept that he was dead, once and for all. I'm there. Her eyes teared up, and she dabbed at them with the dish towel. But promise me something, I said.
Anything.
We grabbed lunch at the diner after. I smiled, making her laugh.
It's a deal.